Thank you for that introduction, Dale. I can tell you very honestly that this is one place that I never, ever dreamed of standing, let alone speaking, when I was a child. So the Lord works in miraculous ways. I'm happy to be here with you. I have many memories of being not in this building, a few in this building, but as long as I was a member here, it was a previous building, that little old Mennonite meeting house that stood here from 1916, which I saw that you have on the wall outside the building. So it's a joy for me to be here with you this morning. Friends, here is a story for our own day and for our own world. This story about Jesus feeding the crowds. God knows that we need a story just like this today, as we hear virtually hour by hour about vast numbers of starving people in Gaza and in many other parts of the world as well. We desperately need a story about Jesus who can feed the multitudes. But beware. Beware of this story that Matthew tells us. Matthew will eventually leave none of us off the hook or out of the picture. It's an amazing story, this story about the banquet out on the hillside. Out in the middle of nowhere, in a deserted place, far from villages with shops and food, Jesus feeds a huge crowd of people, 5,000 men, plus their wives and children, maybe 15 or 20,000 folks altogether. Why do we always call this the feeding of the 5,000? For Matthew, it's many more people. But this is far more than an amazing story about how Jesus feeds a huge multitude of folks. What is perhaps even more amazing about this story is the way Jesus feeds a large crowd. Take note that this is not the Gospel of John. In the Gospel of John, Jesus and Jesus alone feeds the crowds. You can check it out for yourself later. And for John, Jesus is the only one who can feed the crowds. In John's gospel, Jesus himself is the bread of life. So for John, it is Jesus alone who feeds the crowds the nourishment that they need. But we are looking at Matthew's story this morning. And for Matthew, something else, something very significant, comes into the picture. Even if this is still a story about Jesus, the one who can work astonishing miracles, this story is amazing in a strikingly different fashion. This story isn't just about Jesus. It's about Jesus' disciples as well. And this story doesn't happen the way we might tend to think about it or the way that John tells the story. Let's take a closer look. Now, when Jesus heard about the death of John the Baptist, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them and healed their sick. So far, so good. So far, we can make sense of the story, more or less. You may not have noticed this, but Jesus has just had a very hard day. If we look back to the text just before this one, we find out that the disciples of John the Baptist have just come and informed Jesus that John has been killed by Herod the Tetrarch. And this news clearly hits Jesus very hard. John was Jesus' colleague in the work of announcing the kingdom of heaven. In fact, John was out there proclaiming even before Jesus came along. John was the one to whom Jesus went for baptism, in order, as Jesus himself says, to fulfill all righteousness. And John was the one who kept getting under Herod's skin, and under the skin of Herodias as well, with his prophetic words of truth spoken boldly to power. Now John is gone. He's been taken down violently by those in power, because this is what happens to prophets who speak truth to power. John is gone, and Jesus is grieving deeply for the one who went ahead of him. Very likely, Jesus is also thinking long thoughts about what might lie down the road for him, the prophet next in line, and the one who will eventually speak his own words of truth to power. So Jesus clearly needs to get away and to spend some time alone. But it is not to be. Jesus sets out in a boat for a deserted spot with only his disciples for companions. But somehow the word gets around. And by the time he gets to where he is going, the crowd has already arrived ahead of him. So much for a quiet retreat and a chance to grieve in solitude. But in spite of it all, Jesus does the Jesus thing. He is moved with compassion when he sees the crowds, and he sets his own needs aside and reaches out to heal those who are sick. And somehow, this is what we would expect of Jesus. This is, after all, the nature of Jesus' ministry. This is what he has been doing all along, as Matthew tells us, healing the sick, teaching the people, and proclaiming the arrival of God's reign on earth. This is what Jesus does. We aren't surprised. But now there is a new problem. When it was evening, the disciples came to Jesus and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." The day has passed. Jesus has clearly been preoccupied with his healing ministry. It's now evening, and here come the disciples with an obvious dilemma. "Look, Jesus, this is a lonely place. Maybe you didn't notice, but it's getting late. We've been out here the whole day, and so have the crowds. They're obviously hungry. So why don't you send them out so that they can go away to the villages and get something to eat?" This is good thinking, is it not? It's probably the best single solution to the problem at hand. It's a compassionate solution. It's resourceful thinking. If it were left up to me, I would probably give the disciples a really high mark for their compassionate, resourceful troubleshooting. Great job, you folks. But the funny thing is that Jesus doesn't agree with me. Look at what he says to his disciples. They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. What? You've got to be kidding. This is a totally unreasonable demand on the part of Jesus. What is he possibly thinking? We've seen enough of Jesus by now, in Matthew's gospel anyhow, that we know that Jesus could feed the crowds if he wanted to. In fact, remember, all the way back at the beginning of Jesus' adult life, before he even calls his disciples, Jesus meets Satan in just such a deserted place as this one. And what does Satan do? Satan tempts Jesus to make bread out of the stones from the ground. And Jesus could surely do that. Satan's challenge would never be a temptation for Jesus if he couldn't. But Jesus knows that he can if he chooses. Jesus could turn stones into bread. What else? Jesus could also call on God to drop manna right out of heaven, just as God did for Jesus' Israelite forebears, and they were in the wilderness a long, long time ago. Jesus has multiple ways to feed this very crowd very easily without the services of his disciples. That much we already know about Jesus. But Jesus' disciples? Not so much. They know they can't do anything of the kind, and they waste no time in telling Jesus so. Look, Jesus, this is outrageous. What in the world are you thinking? You know we can't do this. We have nothing here except 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. What makes you think that we could feed this massive crowd with this tiny picnic lunch? Get real, Jesus. But Jesus isn't going to listen to his disciples. And neither is he going to zap the stones on the ground or call for manna to fall out of heaven. Jesus will provide food for the crowds, but he doesn't choose to do it all by himself. Instead, he calls on his disciples to help him out. Bring the loaves of bread and the fish here to me, Jesus says. And when the disciples do so, Jesus makes the crowds sit down. Then he takes the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. He looks up to heaven. He blesses them. He breaks them. And he gives them back to the disciples. And the disciples give them to the crowds. Just what Jesus has told them to do. Just what they knew that they couldn't do. And everyone, all 15 or 20,000 of them, however many there were, men, women, and children alike, have enough food to eat and even more than enough. At the end, someone, presumably the disciples, gathers up 12 baskets full of leftover bread and fish. Incredible. Amazing. What in the world has happened here? How did that tiny picnic lunch turn into a gigantic feast with food to spare for far beyond 5,000 people? How did the disciples do what they knew that they couldn't do? What actually happened to those loaves of bread and those fish? One thing only, so far as Matthew tells it to us. They have changed hands twice. First, the disciples have brought the bread and fish and given them to Jesus. Then Jesus has taken the bread and the fish, blessed and broken them, and has given them back to the disciples. That's it. It's still bread and fish. In fact, it's still the very same bread and fish which the disciples brought to Jesus. But something is different, totally different. Now that the bread and the fish have changed hands, this bread and fish do not just feed the first five people in the front row, but 1,000 times that many, and even more. Just how does this happen? Well, Jesus doesn't explain this to his disciples, and neither does Matthew explain this to us. But there are several things about this story that we can see very clearly. First of all, we can see that Jesus needs his disciples. If he does not choose to send the crowds away, or to zap the stones on the ground, or to call for bread to fall from heaven, then Jesus needs his disciples. He needs what they have. He needs their gifts, however small and insignificant. He needs their 5 loaves and their 2 fish. It is, after all, these same loaves and these same fish that feed the crowds. So if the crowds are going to be fed, Jesus needs the disciples to bring him what they have. And this is not all. If Jesus needs the disciples to bring what they have and to place it in his hands, he also needs them to take what he places back into their hands and to pass it out to the crowds. Jesus needs the disciples both before and after. If Jesus is going to feed the crowds, Jesus' disciples have an altogether essential role to play in this drama. But secondly, if Jesus needs the disciples also need Jesus. This much is very clear. When they bring him their tiny picnic lunch of 5 loaves and 2 fish and place it into his hands, these loaves and fish are food enough only for a handful of people. If the disciples were to have handed it out just so, it would never have reached beyond the front row of the crowd. In that respect, the disciples are quite right to object to Jesus' command. They, on their own, by themselves, cannot feed the crowd of thousands, no matter how many thousands we imagine. Left to their own devices, the disciples will run out of resources long before they reach the back row of this hungry multitude. Only when they bring their five loaves and their two fish to Jesus and place them in his hands, only when they receive these loaves and fish back again, blessed and broken, from the hands of Jesus, only then will the disciples have the resources they need to supply that crowd of thousands with food and to spare. If Jesus' disciples are going to feed the crowds, they need Jesus to bless and to break their resources. They need Jesus to enable them for their task. It is that simple. And there we have it. This is the story that Matthew tells us about Jesus, about the disciples, about the hungry crowds. It's an amazing story, a magnificent story. But if we are honest with ourselves, it is also an immensely challenging story for us to read. Because when we do, we find ourselves right in the middle of this story, right between Jesus and the crowds, right in the same spot where the disciples found themselves. We too are Jesus' disciples. We too live in the very middle of a world full of needy people, well more than 5,000 or even 20,000 for that matter. We too, like those first disciples, see the needs around us. And we too long, perhaps even beg, for Jesus himself in his own power to make things right in our world. For Jesus himself in his own power to solve the agonizing problems of the poor, the abused, the dispossessed, the bombarded, and now the starving. We too feel ourselves paralyzed by the enormous tragedy and tragedies all around us. What can we do? We have nothing here except what? What do we have in our hands? Let us look carefully and honestly, because whatever it is, however large or small, however ordinary or extraordinary, however major or insignificant, whatever it is that we have in our hands, this is what Jesus needs from us. There are countless needs in our world. Some of them are close by. Next door, down the street, in our own neighborhood, or across town. Some of them are very far away, in a distant town, in a neighboring state, across the country, around the world. And Jesus needs the bread and the fish in each of our hands to respond to these needs. It may not surprise you, if you know me, when I say that the needs and the griefs that live most deeply in my heart these days are the needs and the griefs of the people of Gaza. I do not know them. The only two Gazans that I have actually met and know to any extent are now living in North America. And they were living in North America already on October 7. But the massive and gut-wrenching tragedy unfolding in Gaza these days, constant, vicious, inescapable bombardment by a powerful military force, lack of food, lack of water, lack of medicine, lack of healthcare facilities, and now the onset of slow but seemingly unstoppable, inevitable forces of mass starvation. All this grief and tragedy has broken my heart daily, hourly, minute by minute over the past 6 months. And what I have discovered over this period of time is that the bread and the fish in my hands are words, ordinary words, English words, words that describe, words that ask questions, words that call powerful people to do what they know that they can do, to bring a halt to the ongoing obscenity of death and destruction, which is overtaking the people of Gaza and destroying their homes, their churches, their mosques, their schools, their hospitals, the unspeakable violence which is destroying their very lives as well, by the tens of thousands. My words, my letters filled with words, have not yet, certainly, brought peace to the people of Gaza. But they have brought encouragement to many other people. I know this because they have told me so. So I know without any question that the bread and the fish in my hands, the bread and fish that I am called to place into Jesus' hands, are the words that I write. What are the needs and the griefs that confront you day by day, week by week, and month by month? And what are the loaves and fish in your hands? What does Jesus ask from you? If your Sunday school hour were still ahead rather than already past, I would love to hear from you what this story of Matthew says to you, how it calls you forth, and what loaves and fish you have in your hands. Jesus wills to bring healing and wholeness into our broken, violent, suffering world. And he wills to do it through us, through our gifts, through our involvement. Just as he called those first disciples, Jesus calls us as well to bring him what we have in our hands. This is a word to all of us alike, each of us, whoever we are, whatever our past experiences, whatever our present circumstances, each of us has something in our hands. So Jesus' word is a word of challenge that leaves none of us untouched. But this story offers us much more than a word of challenge, important as that is. This story offers us an amazing word of grace. It assures us that when we bring to Jesus what we have in our hands, then Jesus will indeed take that gift, will bless it, break it, and give it back to us so that we too will be empowered to reach out to our world with hands of compassion, so that we too will be enabled to touch the brokenness of our world with hands of healing, so that we too will be strengthened daily for our tasks by the power of Jesus himself. This is not only the best of news. This is the good news itself. God, give us ears to hear the call of Jesus, eyes to recognize the bread and fish in our hands, and hearts to respond in faithfulness to the call of Jesus and to the needs and the griefs that confront us in our daily living. Amen, and may it be so.